Hey, this is Mario from Earthless, and you're listening to The Vinyl Guide with Nate Goyer.
Well, hey, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. This week, we are talking Earthless with Mario Rubalcaba. Earthless is a three-piece, but man, what a sound. Heavy groove psych rock, and their new album, Black Heaven, is absolutely killer. Here, listen to a bit of it right now. Love this band, and today we are talking with drummer Mario about his history with drumming and professional skateboarding, his other bands and projects, including Hot Snakes, Rocket from the Crypt, Off, and more. Plus, we'll talk Earthless, and of course their new LP Black Heaven, their upcoming tour, plus we'll play a full cut from the Earthless LP. Stick around for that. And we are brought to you in part today by Run Out Groove Vinyl. Look, there are a bazillion record clubs and subscription services, but there's only one Run Out Groove Vinyl. They have access to the original tapes from the record companies and the artists, and they cut limited edition vinyl directly with care and detail. Some of my absolute favorite records of the last year have been Run Out Groove Vinyl releases, including The Stooges' Funhouse Sessions, Secret Machines, Dr. John, Marshall Crenshaw. They've also got a re-release of The Baby Huey Story, The Living Legend, and Bo Brummel's coming out on Record Store Day. So make sure you check them out at runoutgroovevinyl.com. That's runoutgroovevinyl.com. Limited reissues that sound friggin' great. And with that, let's get on to our conversation with Mario Rubalcaba of Earthless.
Do you listen to and collect vinyl records? Well, you're in luck. Welcome to The Vinyl Guide, the podcast made for record nerds like yourself. Here's your host, the biggest record nerd of them all, Nate Goyer.
Well, look at this, my goodness. What a lovely fake audience we have in my basement today. By the looks and sounds of it, looks like, what, maybe 1,000 people here watching me do this? I'll have to ask them to turn their head if I have to do something else. Whoa, look at that. Well, it's nice to see how they react. Here, let's watch this. Look, everyone. Look at this cute little puppy dog. Aww. Wow. It's amazing what you could do with a bit of technology. Hi, everyone. Happy new episode. For those of you who are tuning in for the first time, I am Nate, your host of The Vinyl Guide, the weekly podcast where we talk records, music, and have on artists that make all those wonderful, rare, and collectible records we love. I hope you're well. Thanks for downloading and listening. I do quickly want to thank the listeners who have recently left positive reviews for The Vinyl Guide on iTunes. People like LukeF015, Reclaim Sonoma, Adamoda 14, Chopper AR13, MiG40, Babaducci, and more. Look, if those people are in the audience today, oh, look, there they are. Please stand up. Give them a round of applause. All right, so everyone else, leave us a positive iTunes review. And at the end, you could stand up in our fake studio audience too. Just go to iTunes.com, find the Vinyl Guide podcast or app, select ratings and reviews, give us a nice write-up, see if you could make me blush. How about that? Now, last week's episode was killer, featuring Mike Portnoy, the drumming legend of Dream Theater, and now Sons of Apollo. Mike came on, he discusses history with music, the records, the rare stuff in his catalog, his own music collection, and of course, Sons of Apollo, the group he's currently in with Billy Sheehan, Derek Sherinian, Jeff Scott Soto, and Bumblefoot Thal on guitar. And as good as Mike is on the new LP, I'm most blown away by Bumblefoot. He absolutely burns. His guitar work is stellar. So I'm going to try to get him on the show. Bumblefoot, if you're listening, I'm coming for you. I've already had on Billy Sheehan on the show, episode number 85. We've now had Portnoy. I just may make my way through this whole band. They're that good. And wow, two drummers in a row. This week, it is Mario Rubalcaba of Earthless, the band I'm way stoked on. Their new LP, Black Heaven, is incredible. I played a bit of it at the top of the show, but I'll play a full track after the interview. Man, you gotta hear this band. They are absolutely amazing, and I've heard nothing but great things on their live show. So check out their tour dates at earthlessofficial.com or facebook.com/earthlessrips. Now, Mario is apparently quite the Renaissance man. He's not only the drummer of Earthless, but he also sits behind the kit of Hot Snakes, Rocket from the Crypt, Off, and no doubt several that I'm not naming here. He was also a professional skateboarder. So yeah, he sounds pretty low-key and mellow, but lots of energy in this guy. So we're going to get into the conversation, but again, stay afterward. You're going to hear a track from the new Earthless LP. I'll play it afterward, and if you enjoy it, order one of their cool splatter pressings of Black Heaven at earthlessofficial.com. Hopefully they have some left, and they look as cool as the record sounds. All right, let's do it. Mario Rubalcaba of Earthless. This week on The Vinyl Guide, we are talking records, drums, rock and roll, and Earthless with drummer Mario Rubalcaba. How are you today? How are you today, Mario?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm waiting for the coffee to kind of just take its effect here. Still a little bit early for me, as you know. Now, for the audience who may not know, Earthless is a three-piece with Mario on drums, and they've got a brand new LP, Black Heaven. It's heavy, heavy rock. Which, with all the genre names, is there a preferred way you like to describe the music of Earthless?
Ah, man, we just, you know, I mean, to us it's just loud rock and roll, but, you know, with all the different influences that we've kind of thrown into it, you know, I guess it leans a little bit more towards the psychedelic kind of edge. But, you know, to us, it's just, you know, loud kind of psych rock stuff.
Who are those influences?
Well, if I could throw it all in a nutshell, I would definitely throw out some of the classic ones, of course, you know, the Cream, Zeppelin, Sabbath stuff. But then there's like, you know, ZZ Top, James Gang. And then we have some of the weirder stuff that kind of really formed the band. There's some Japanese psych rock that we were really into when we started, a band called Flower Traveling Band, another band called Blues Creation. And then there was like the German krautrock stuff that we were into, bands like Can, Guru Guru, Amandul, stuff like that.
Mm. And with the three-piece, you guys coming together with those common influences, are there any bands that one or more of you are bringing in and the others are saying, wait a minute, I do not get that?
Not really, man. We're all pretty tuned in to a lot of the same stuff. If anything, you know, well, if we don't know of something that someone else is into, we, you know, they'll kind of show it to us. And we just, you know, I can't say we always agree on everything, every band that, you know, we're into, but, for the most part,
yeah,
definitely. We're all pretty open to listen to a lot of different stuff, and there is such a wide range of stuff that everyone in the band is into. So it all kind of gets involved into that process, definitely.
And along with Earthless, you also play with several other groups, Hot Snakes, Off. But going back a little bit, when did you start being influenced by music?
Oh man, pretty young age, actually. Probably when I was like five, my first memories are like being 5 years old and just being at my grandparents' house and my uncle's just kind of invading my uncle's record collection, you know, and even back then they had 8-track tapes. So I would listen to, you know, the first Deep Purple 8-track tape and then the Grand Funk. We're an American band. I would listen to those 2 8-tracks all fucking day long. And then I was, you know, I was a product of the Kiss generation. So the first record I ever bought was Kiss Alive. And I just, you know, being a kid and looking at their makeup, of course, they look like cartoon characters. But essentially their music at that time was still just real rock and roll, you know. And so that was kind of the springboard for me of what I, you know, my first memories of what I would really listen to and absorbed. And then I got into like Van Halen and Zeppelin and Sabbath and later on got into punk rock stuff, you know.
And how did you discover punk rock?
I was in sixth grade, and before that I was I used to listen to the radio all the time, and there was a really amazing metal, kind of a metal show on late at night. And through that metal show, I discovered the first wave of all the kind of speed metal and thrash bands, you know, so the first Metallica, the very first Slayer, and Merciful Fate, and all that kind of stuff. Venom, you know, it was all their first albums. No one, you know, it was very, really new at the time. And I was 11 years old. So that kind of transformed me into like hearing this faster, more aggressive and heavy music. You know, it was the heaviest stuff I'd heard. Go fast forward to sixth grade. I had two guys, friends of mine, that were into hardcore and punk. And I think I played them like Motorhead or like Venom. And they were just kind of laughed at me. And we're just like, you think that's fast? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, oh man, you got to check this out. And they played me the Bad Brains. And they played me like Discharge. They played me, they actually played me a band from my hometown called Battalion of Saints that was like so brutal and fast, and also kind of had this metallic edge. So that's what turned me on into punk and hardcore right there. Was, you know, those two guys.
Now, this is at a time when punk and metal really didn't come together that much.
Yeah. No, very divided. Very divided. I went to a couple shows not too long after that when I was pretty young. And, you know, there was San Diego was kind of a violent town for shows in general. But, you know, the meddlers and the skins or the punks, man, you know, the punks just ruled. They would just beat up the meddlers like all day long. It was gnarly, you know, not like it is now. Everything just kind of goes and blends together. But there was different crews back then.
Okay. And what were some of those early shows that you saw?
Well, the first couple ones I went to go see were, there was a band called Excel, which was kind of a crossover band, some band called Dr. No, which was another sort of a crossover band. So that's where I was able to see these, you know, like here's the skinheads and then here's the meddlers. And then, cause these bands kind of like were starting to fuse these different influences. So, those were some of the early ones that I remember. RKL, Circle Jerks, you know, Bad Brains, stuff like that.
And at what point did you move from listener of music to participant?
Well, I've been playing drums since I was like 5 years old. So I've been playing drums for a long time, off and on. I stopped for a while when I got into like BMX bikes and stuff like that. And then, but once I started skateboarding, that's when, you know, like music, like punk rock and skateboarding kind of went hand in hand. And it was just a matter of time. I met a buddy of mine. He was a little bit older. He was playing guitar and he wanted to start a little punk band. So we got together one of my first bands. I was about like 14 years old, I think. So mm-hmm. From there on, I haven't really stopped. So.
You touched on this skateboarding. Now, at one point, you were a professional skateboarder, actually getting paid to go out and skate in different places. Talk to us about that a little bit. What was that life like?
Oh, man, it was, yeah, definitely some of the best times of my life, you know, especially at that age, too. I got sponsored by Tony Alva and Alva Skates when I was towards like 15 years old. And, you know, I would just entered contests and go do demos and stuff and just kind of just work as hard as I could to like build myself up to like get to a level to, you know, hopefully one day turn pro, you know what I mean? You know what city in Australia are you in?
I'm in Sydney.
In Sydney. Okay. So I got sponsored by Alva, and when I was 16, one of my first ever real skateboard trip traveling out of the US was going to Australia and Japan. So I went to Australia when I was 16, and I think we were based in Sydney at first. And is Manly Beach, that's in Sydney, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So there used to be a couple ramps on Manly Beach at the time. This was probably like 1988, towards the end of 88. Mm-hmm. And there was a really cool half pipe at a, I think it was called Perron. Is that the right?
Oh, Perron. That's in Melbourne. But yeah.
Okay, so then I went to the Perron ramp, which I think is still there somehow. And then, so I just got to skate Australia and just kind of check it out for the first time. So
as a 16-year-old, you've got your passport and you're just traveling around skateboarding professionally. That's got to be the life, man. That's also going to also kind of tweak with you a little bit. That's, you know, in your formative years, you're already kind of doing this thing.
Yeah. You know, one thing about that trip, though, was a real big life changer, though, for me, because at that time when I was 16, the music I was listening to was, you know, in retrospect, I was pretty closed-minded. I only listened to punk and hardcore and like thrash metal and death metal and speed metal. And that was it, you know, just those two kind of forms of music. And then the kid that was kind of taking me around to the spots and stuff and like taking us around at nighttime, he took us to a show, and the band that was playing there was a band called The New Christs. And he was explaining to me, he's like, oh yeah, it's like the singer of this band's a legend. I'm like, oh, what, you know, cool. Well, how come, you know? And it was this guy, Rob Younger, from a band called Radio Birdman. Mm. And, to me, Australian legendary rock and roll band. And so, I got to see the New Christ play in Australia, and I thought they were amazing. Like, it was like, you know, I'd never seen a rock and roll band like that, you know, at 16. And so when I got home to the States, I went and checked out Radio Birdman. And from there, that opened up a whole new world of like what influenced them. You know what I mean? So I found out about the Saints. I found out about like MC5 and like all this other kind of high energy, like rock and roll stuff. So it opened up a whole new musical genres for me, you know? So. Mm-hmm. That's what I remember from that trip.
Yeah, it's interesting. I grew up on the west coast of the U.S., not too far from you. And when I moved to Australia about 20 years ago, there was a whole new set of bands and a whole new musical vocabulary I just had to, get absorbed into. Same sort of thing. New Christ, The Hitmen, Radio Birdman, Lime Spiders, you know. So
exactly.
It's funny, this kind of parallel universe that grew
yeah, man.
So, do you still skate? I mean, I'm assuming you make your living by drums. Are you worried about, getting an injury?
Yeah, I do still skate, and I try to skate as much as I can. I just went out a couple nights ago. There's a skate park that just opened up pretty close to my house. So, when I'm on tour, I don't take my board with me on the road anymore. But when I'm home, I'll have at it and just cruise around. I'm not trying to do anything too crazy, but I do realize though, if you don't step on your board for a while, it doesn't get any easier to work those muscles that don't otherwise get worked. You know what I mean? So, as long as I just keep cruising around and can do a couple things, you know what I mean? It's like, hey man, like you can get hurt just stepping off a curb. You know what I mean? Like, so you might as well have fun with life when you're home.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I just have my mother's voice in my head, like, be careful,
definitely. I've definitely burnt that candle on both ends before, man. I got going back to a band I played in called Rocket from the Crypt. We had in 2005 we had announced our last show, and we were gonna break up, and about a month before that last show, I was just skating local skate park. And I collided into one of my friends, and he dislocated one of his fingers, and then I like hit my wrist weird, I didn't think nothing of it, but then like later on that night, like the wrist like swelled up and was all black and blue, and I was just like, fuck, man, this is bad. And like luckily I had like a month to kind of like really kick ass and like heal it, like iced it every day and put all this stuff. And I was I was fine for the show, but that was a pretty close call, you know. So I definitely want to try to avoid that for sure in the future.
Yeah, you're gonna have to, when you tour, you have to have handy one of those Rick Allen Def Leppard drum kits just in case you get your
yeah.
So all right, so you start to go from professional skateboarder to professional drummer, or well, what was happening in between? How did that transition from doing the, you know, traveling around professional skateboarder to playing for Rocket from the Crypt and all the other bands you're now involved in?
Well, a little before that, I had started playing. Probably my first touring and recording band was this band called 411, which was a little bit more of a melodic kind of a hardcore band, I guess. So through that, we had put a record out, and it was through my connections with skateboarding. I think, you know, a lot of the skaters heard it, and, you know, a couple people, pros had used it in their video parts. And so we got, you know, a pretty good following with like the skateboard world as well. You know, it's just the normal hardcore crowd. So that kind of kickstarted, you know, what I would, I guess, for lack of a better word, call my career or whatever. But, you know, after that band dissolved, I got into some other bands, but not until I started playing with Rocket from the Crypt was probably my first real professional working band, I would say. Before that, I was just like, you know, quitting my jobs to go on tour just to lose money, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, which was great. I mean, I was all for it, you know what I mean? I didn't care. I had no cares in the world. I just wanted to get out there and play if I could, you know?
Oh, that's interesting because, yeah, I didn't even think about that. Professional skateboarding and punk rock are so connected that one could easily be an entry point into the other.
Yeah. Once my skateboarding career like faded out, you know, I just thought music was the way to go, and I just was playing more and, you know, playing with a lot of different people and stuff. And I just figured, you know, skating's getting a little bit crazier. I didn't really want to be jumping off like a two-story building to make a meager living. You know what I mean? Like, I just wanted to skate how I wanted to skate. And at that time, you kind of had to like either conform to what was being done or you know, move on. You know, so.
And the trends in skateboarding, I mean, is it just always getting more dangerous, more faster? Like, how does – I know very little about skateboarding, but being in there, again, must be
– all of the above. It's such a sport that is just, like, built on progression. And, like the stuff that kids are doing these days, it's, like, literally, like, these were just things that were, you know, on, like, the Tony Hawk Pro Skater video games, you know what I mean? Like, it's progressed so much. It's amazing to watch – where it's at now. But at the same time, I've never seen skateboarding so diverse and open to like so many different styles of skating. You know, it's not as close-minded as maybe it was, you know, some years ago, you know, where like the trends were like the trends, you know.
So you mentioned the band 411, and there were some singles, at least one, maybe a couple, on Workshed Records. Who were Workshed Records?
That was Dan's label, the singer, Dan O'Mahony. So he did Workshed Records, but that was, I think it was distributed through like a label called Headhunter or something like that. But yeah, that was his little deal for a while that did a couple things. Mm-hmm. Didn't really last too long, but yeah.
Some of the first recordings were from West Beach Studios, which credited Brett Gurewitz of Epitaph. Was he an engineer, a producer, just a guy hanging around? What was his role in 411?
I think he was just more of possibly an engineer and just kind of hanging around. The main guy that I remember working with was this guy, Donald Cameron, I believe his name was. And he was the guy that was kind of doing the main stuff behind the board and kind of like, you know, controlling the session. But Brett was there, you know, both of those guys worked together a lot. And so, yeah, he was hanging.
Okay. Do you remember him like giving recommendations, or was he just, all right,
nah,
starting
not really.
The recorder?
Yeah. Nothing really too memorable about him being there.
Okay. I noticed his name on the credits, so I had to ask.
Yeah.
So throughout the late 80s and 90s, you went through several different bands, a lot of singles. What was it about producing singles that you liked so much?
I don't think it was an intentional thing. I just think it was whatever the, you know, at the time that we had a couple songs and we just wanted to get something recorded and get it out there, you know, for a tour or for like, you know, just to have something. I think back then, 7 inches were a little bit more popular of a format and a little bit more collectible to, you know, the fans of, you know, the bands I was in. So, you know, it was just something easy to do. You know, we didn't always just have a surplus of songs, you know, to record. So is, you know, there would be like times where like, oh yeah, we, you know, have a song here, let's try this out. And then we come up with another one. It's like, okay, let's go and record it. You know, let's do a 7-inch or like a split something with another band, you know, it's just kind of how it worked back then, I guess.
I imagine getting material together for a 7-inch and knocking one of those out is very fun, very instantaneous, and the gratification comes quickly. And of course you could sell them and do whatever you want at gigs, but there's no deep attachment to them if they, if you end up getting stuck with a box of them somewhere.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, they're just fun things to do.
Do you still have copies of all the singles?
For the most part, yeah. I think for most of them, I still have probably a couple copies, you know, one or two here and there. But there's definitely some holes in the collection, I'm sure.
Okay. Now, you gravitate in and out of bands. And I mean, not just in the 90s, but, you know, even now you have several different projects going on. How do you know when a project is done? How do you know when it's time for the band to walk away?
Well, looking back, I mean, I think most of the projects, when they've ended, it was just either, I don't know, man, it's a kind of a hard one to think about, because it's never been like a dramatic thing, like in any of the bands I've been in. It's always just been like, well, kind of feeling like things aren't going to really keep going, you know what I mean? So like a lot of times that we'd have a tour booked and we would just finish the tour and that might have been the last shows or something like that, you know. But with Rocket, we at the time there just wasn't a lot happening, and everyone's life was changing. You know, a bunch of people were starting to have kids, and you know, it's like, unless you were going to dedicate 100% of your time to touring and trying to make a living out of it, there wasn't a lot of stuff happening. So we just kind of decided to, you know, not do it anymore if the heart wasn't into it. So you know, I guess you just kind of just have this feeling like, okay, life is gonna change, you know, so we're gonna try and do other stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a band like Earthless, you know, there's three of you, so it's a lot easier to manage, I guess, than if there were four or five. But it's been a long-term commitment. You guys have been together well over 10 years now. Yeah,
you know, I'm thinking back. Earthless first started playing together in 2001, but, you know, a couple of those years got lost and we didn't, you know, really play too much the first couple of years, maybe a show here and there. But we didn't put out our first record until 2005. We didn't really start touring up until like 2006 or 7. And then, you know, we just kind of just would just do it around other projects and whenever we kind of had time or felt like it. So it was never really forced, you know, to like have to do stuff. And I kind of think that's added to our longevity, and also to, you know, just being able to just to stay together this long, is that we've never really like forced it. Like, oh, we got to tour like four times a year. We got to, you know, we got to do this, we got to do that, you know, like. It's just always been pretty, you know, relaxed and whenever we want to do it. Yeah. Definitely this year is going to be different though. You know, we're really going to do a lot of touring and try to, you know, see what, you know, what we can do, you know, just because we've always been at the helm of other projects and stuff. So it's really cool to be able to put Earthless as a priority for once, you know, in its lifetime. So we're excited to get out there and play.
Now, you guys come together every few years. Do you feel like strangers sometimes? Because all that time that passes, the connections can get a bit stretched and whatever. Do you feel connected immediately when you guys get back together? Or is there a bit of a time where you have to reintroduce one another.
No, we don't have that problem. We're Earthless has such a really unique chemistry. We really are like brothers, man. We're like a family. And with that being said, you know, it doesn't mean we get along, we're happy all the time. You know, we definitely have, you know, interesting relationships, but we love each other and we really, really, really like, if we didn't do the band, we would still all, you know, hang out and be pretty close. So if we haven't played together in a long time, we get back in a room and start playing, it's on. We have a really cool chemistry, and it's the only band in my, you know, extensive years of playing that, you know what, if we haven't played in 6 months or 3 months at all, we could book a tour and go to Europe or somewhere and just get up on stage and start playing. We've done it many times before. You know, one of the times we went to Australia, we had a festival booked at that Meredith Festival. And we hadn't played together since the last tour before that, which was like 3 months or 4 months before. And so we're like, all right, we'll meet up in Australia and get up on that stage and just do what we do, you know?
Hey, good to see you. All right, let's play. No practice, no, yeah. Nothing, just wing it. That's great.
And exactly.
The new album, Black Heaven, I got to tell you, one of the big benefits of being a quote-unquote music journalist is you get advances of these things, and I've been listening to this album nonstop for the past few weeks. It is absolutely killer. I can't wait to get I'm on MP3 right now. I can't wait to get the vinyl copy myself.
Awesome.
In that album, it's a little bit different from the past work because there's a lot more lyrics. There's a lot more vocals, which, you know, again, it complements the music. It works fine, but it is a bit of a shift in the focus. Was there a deliberate change, or did you feel it was just time to start exploring other instruments?
Well, first of all, I'm stoked and glad that you dig the record. I also can't wait to get the vinyl version as well. Looking forward to hearing it on an actual, you know, format that is intended to be on. But, you know, I think when we were starting to think about recording a new album, we just didn't, first off, we didn't want to repeat the last one, you know, From the Ages. And I don't think we really could have, you know, that record was done in the era of the band when we all lived in the same city and, you know, used to practice two or three times a week. And, you know, you need that kind of time to build those long, you know, jams or whatever, you know, those pieces. And we didn't have that convenience this time around. So we kind of had to just think about, okay, like, what are we going to do here? And we have this amount of time if we want to get the record out next year. So we got to come up with some sort of a plan. With Isaiah living, you know, up in Northern California, he's about 8-9 hours away from us. We had to kind of just think about things different. And we just kind of thought, like, well, what if we just try and do some songs and with some vocals and see if that works, you know, organically for the band. And he came up with some ideas and would send them down, email them down. And once he would come down and visit for a couple of days, we had some solid, you know, couple parts to work on. And we just started from there. And from there, that's how we just kind of worked. And it worked out really good. And we were all into it, you know. It was pretty cool.
With Earthless Music, how much of it is improv? How much of it is known before you go into the recording studio?
Well, in the past, let me think here. On the first album, Sonic Prayer, that one was largely improvised. The first song called Flower Traveling Man. you know what? We came up with that when we were getting tones for the studio. We were like, you know, when you're checking the mics, you're hitting the snare over and over again, and you're getting the bass tones. And then our buddy that was, you know, recording us, he's like, all right, let me just, you know, let's get some bass and drums going together so I can hear you guys, you know, get the mix together. So Mike and I just started playing that groove together, you know, and we were just playing that, over, you know, for a minute for a long time, like just over and over again, play that same groove. And then Isaiah joined in and we're like, oh man, that's pretty cool. That's a pretty cool little groove we got going there. And so we aborted the initial jam that we were going to record and recorded that. And we just did like maybe two takes of it, and that was side one. So there you go. side two was a little bit more structured, but it had lots of room in between the structured riffs, you know, to just go off and just kind of wing it, you know. So there was a lot of improvisation on those first two records. Mm-hmm. On From the Ages, that record, you know, kind of the same. There's a lot of structure in it, but within that structure, we always have these parts where we can just go off and do whatever and see what happens. But we always kind of know when to come back into the main riff.
So there's like a theme. There's a few riffs, but there's areas that you could explore as well.
For sure, yeah.
Okay. And when you guys are recording, are you in a place? Because this album was recorded at Rancho de la Luna, which very famous studio out in Joshua Tree, yeah?
Yep.
Could you guys see one another as you played to have the visual cues? How did that
Yeah, work? For okay. sure. Yeah, definitely. We have to have that. It's just not fun recording any other way. I mean, especially for Earthless, like we're such a live band anyways. You know, in the studio, you know, we could have the amps in a different room or wherever, but like we all have to be in the same room, kind of being able to look at each other and have those cues and kind of work that way. You know, that's just kind of what feels the best and what makes it sound the best, I think.
Mm. Now, there seems to be a ton of vinyl variations of this LP. If you go to, you know, I went to Earthless Official to order mine. There's mm-hmm. there's green speckled ones, there's black ones, there's brown, whatever, there's multicolored ones. Do you collect them all, or do you really care about having those sort of copies, or is there one that you're looking forward to seeing?
Ideally, I would like to have at least one of each, but, you know, we'll see what happens. But there's a couple of the colors I would really, really like to have. I love like the crazy splattered, you know, kind of bright colors and stuff. There was a couple that I picked out. I think ones like green and yellow and purple and blue and white. It's, you know, so I hope I can get that one at least. But yeah, we'll see if I can collect them all.
now you sound like a bit of a vinyl head as well. I mean, vinyl is your preferred method of hearing the music?
Yeah, definitely, for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I'm a music collector, but mainly I'm a collector of music. I'm not really my main priority isn't about the pressing per se, or like the colored vinyl or the white label promo, you know. I mean, that's all good. And there's definitely some things that I look for that might be, you know, attached to that. But I just like, you know, music, you know what I mean? Like there was a record that I had looked for so long and I could never find a bootleg of it. So I bought this super crappy CD of it and I just wanted to hear the record, you know? So that's how I am. But my preferred format is vinyl for sure.
And describe for us your vinyl collection.
Oh man, it's like a roller coaster. It goes everywhere. You know, punk, hardcore, rock and roll, garage, psychedelic, jazz, a lot of soul and funk. You know, there's a lot of indie stuff. There's some blues. You know, it's all over the place.
What's a record that you have that you think would surprise most people?
Oh, okay. Well, one that I just listened to the other day was a band called Tok Tok, which most people would think is like an 80s kind of a pop dance band. But their last record that they put out in, I think it was in the early 90s, it's called Laughingstock. And it's such the recording of the record is just amazing. But the songs on it are like, there's such a cool atmosphere to it. It's kind of avant-garde. You know, atmospheric sort of light, moody music, but the drums are really cool in it. There's some really cool guitar sounds on there. There's some pretty out there electronics kind of on there. I think everyone that I've always like played this record to is just like, that's Tok Tok, the band that did the 80s, you know, stuff. And they can't believe it's the same band, you know? So that's definitely one that throws people for a loop. What else? One of my favorite bands in the world is just Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. You know,
mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I always throw this one out. Like, people will be like, oh, like, what would you rather take to a, you know, like a desert island or something like that? Like, sleep or Tom Petty? I'm just like, Tom Petty, dude.
Yeah, I think being on a desert island with sleep would, that would, as much as I love sleep, I'm not sure that would be, that would connect with the vibe so much. Yeah, I would have to agree with you, Tom Petty. Yeah. Oh, Tom Petty's solid. I mean, and the musicianship was just great. And I'm so bummed that we lost him early because I think there was so much more for him to say. But yeah, what an incredible career, incredible catalog, Tom Petty. So yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Well, I got to see his last show, at the Hollywood Bowl. And I saw him three times on this last tour. And then I saw him, they played here in San Diego. And that was like maybe a week before they were on the last leg of the tour. And so that San Diego show was so amazing. I was just like, man, they added on one more, a third night at the Hollywood Bowl. And I'm just like, fuck it. I got to do it. So I paid a little bit of money for that ticket and I went up there by myself. And you know, unfortunately it ended up being the last show ever, you know?
No. Now, with your bands and your career growing and everything, are you in a position now where you're starting to meet some of your idols?
Yeah, you know, I mean, throughout the years, I mean, this, you know, even going back to skateboarding, I would say, you know, like, you know, writing for Tony Alva, you know, he was definitely one of my idols growing up. You know, at a young age, you know, I had studied the old magazines from the 70s, you know, like seeing him in the mags, and so writing for him was definitely the first time I'd really encountered that. But definitely, like, throughout the bands I've played in, you know, I've met a lot of people and bands that I was influenced by or looked up to. But kind of ironically, you know, recently, you know, I got to actually jam with one of the guys in the Heartbreakers. You know, I got to play with, sit in and play some music with Ron, the bass player. And, he lives here in San Diego. So, through mutual friends, you know what I mean? They have a little thing where they do, some stuff at a bar and just kind of have like a sit-in sort of like kind of blues jam or whatever. So got to hang out, and he's a really, really nice guy. And so, I mean, that, you know, if you would have told me like 20 years ago or whatever, I would be jamming with Ron from the Heartbreakers, I would have thought you're crazy. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, people are people, and mm-hmm. you're either a good person or you're not, you know what I mean? And if you're a good person and you're cool and you're down to earth, then you know what? It's just like anything else, you know, it's just fun and it's just cool, you know.
Recently we had on the show Don Was, and he said something that really, you know, really stayed with me, in that he could jam with someone and within 5 minutes he would know so much about that person just by the way they played music.
Totally.
You could feel the same sort of way. How would you, I guess, expand on that? Like, what is it that you pick up from another individual when you're playing with them that is insightful to them?
I totally agree with that, because for me, music is very spiritual. And by that, it doesn't mean it's like, oh, it's like entitled to like a God or anything like that. But it just has, music is just a human, it's just a spirit. There's character, there's emotion, there's a vibe. And I can tell, I mean, I've been lucky, you know, I've played with a lot of different characters and people throughout the last, you know, 25 years or so. And, you know, definitely, I think that's a pretty unique, a pretty accurate observation. Like, you know, there's people that really put their heart and soul into what they do. Sometimes there's people that play music that you can tell, like, hey, they just, you know, studied and they're more of a trained musician, you know what I mean? That's not bad, but like, from where I'm coming from, I'm not a trained musician. I'm self-taught. I just listen by ear, and to me, I have to go off of my instinct, off my emotion, off my what's in my heart, what feels good. And or sometimes, you know, music, you know, you might feel angry, you might feel, you know, frustrated, and music can transform all those kind of emotions, I think, you know. It's one of the wonders about it, I guess.
And speaking of playing with various characters off, what is happening with off these days?
You know what, kind of a little bit of a hiatus for the last year or so. Steven's been playing pretty full time with the Melvins, and they tour a lot, so he's doing that. You know what? I think I haven't talked to those guys in a while, but I'm pretty sure Keith and Dimitri are writing some new stuff right now. I don't really know. I'm still in the band as far as I know, but I think I'm just focusing on Earthless right now, you know, while the band's taking time off, and I'm just going to do this and see what happens, and hopefully and whenever the time persists, we can meet up again and make some music, because it's a lot of fun to play with those guys too, you know. Mm-hmm. Totally different chemistry and characters involved, but I love those guys. They're good guys, and
yeah, it just seems with you fun. with your tour schedule, and of course Steven playing with Melvins and all around, it must be difficult to get all of you guys together in a room.
Yeah, they all live up in LA too, and I'm here in San Diego, so it definitely has to be planned out a little bit different, but also, I mean, Keith is, he's in his early 60s, and I'm sure he's not just waiting for the opportunity to jump into a van and just drive around the country, you know. Mm-hmm. We did that for like 5-6 years straight, you know, and I got to give it to him, you know. It's a lot of hard work. It's hard on you, and he's a trooper, you know. I hope I can be that strong and resilient when I'm his age, you know. He wrote his book a year ago or so, and he's been doing stuff with that. I think he might be working on another one, and Keith deserves to just do what he wants to do whenever he wants to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got a great life. He's moseying around. I'd love to have his life, minus the diabetes. All right, so Mario, thank you so much for coming on the show. And I got to tell you again, the new album Black Heaven is such an ass kicker. And for people who are unfamiliar with Earthless, you got to check out this band. If you like Led Zeppelin, if you like Deep Purple, if you like just heavy rock and just groove oriented music, check out Earthless. The new album Black Heaven is fantastic. Even some of the older stuff, Rhythms from a Cosmic Sky, is something that I play pretty regularly here. You can find out more at earthlessofficial.com. You can check out tour dates at earthlessofficial.com. And again, Mario, thank you so much for joining us here on the Vinyl Guide.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. And we love Australia. We can't wait to get back out there and play some shows. So check out the new album when you can.
Cool. Thanks, man. Oh, wow. Man, oh man, I think I need a shower. That is the title track of Black Heaven from Earthless. Get your copy of this LP from your local record shop. Ask them, bother them to order it in, have them make a nice display of it. Or if you're just too high to get off the couch, simply order one from earthlessofficial.com. Alrighty, that's it for this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sharing with your friends. Make sure you check out our apps. We have Vinyl Guide apps at the Apple App Store or on Google Play. Simply search for The Vinyl Guide, and it's free, and you'll have immediate access to all 100-plus episodes and interviews we've done here on The Vinyl Guide. We'll be back with a new episode next week. So until then, keep spinning. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.